Healing is most often a process and not a moment. And healing of the body and mind takes time. It may need medical care, and even so, it has no guarantees. In the church, I have been a witness to desperate cries to God to take away physical illness, mental anguish and pain. I have witnessed disappointment. I have witnessed momentary relief. But mostly, I have seen the wonder of people coming around each other to bear the burden of what one person cannot carry alone. And not many in our society have this kind of relational network that we have been blessed with. And in the context of illness and pain, other types of healing come to the fore. It is this most profound sense of healing, this multi-layered reality, the restoration of body, of mind, of spirit, of relationships, and of society that Jesus came to restore. And in John's account of this miracle story, Jesus approaches a man with a chronic lifelong illness. Do you want to be made well? And the man replies with a rather perplexing response. He does not speak about his body. Rather, he says, "Sir, I have no one." And someone else steps in ahead of me. These are social realities, one of loneliness and one of inequality of opportunities. And it interests me that the author of John's Gospel embeds the story into an intense debate that is going on between Jesus and the religious leaders about healing on holy days. And you would have noticed the clue right at the end. Now that day was a Sabbath. And then you know the conversation that ensued after that. The power of one group is being abused to make rules that exclude a human being who lies alone from being helped on Sabbath days. These days, when the second Jerusalem temple nearby had more visitors than other days, more people who could help, and yet on the Sabbath day, they were not allowed. Power is an insidious disease that seeps into each one of us. And it can be oh so subtle. It can look like helping. It can look like charity, like taking care of the values of a community, when in actual fact, in the role of doing for others, we may be actually keeping them in a helpless position. I wonder what would have happened if Jesus turned to the religious leaders of the first century and asked, "Do you want to be made well?" Would they have recognized it? I'm aware of the many times that I walk blinded to my own need of relational healing. And even when the Spirit's light exposes these unintentional patterns of power use, I sometimes am not ready to let them go. And I've often pondered the question, what is this pattern of being more powerful doing for me? What's it doing for my ego, my sense of worth? And I often don't ask, what is it doing to me? And what is it doing to others? Perhaps preventing mutual friendship and respect. I will never forget the words of Archbishop Desmond Tutu during those awful years of apartheid in South Africa. He said this, in dehumanizing others, they, that was me and my people, are themselves dehumanized. Perhaps oppression dehumanizes the oppressor as much as, if not more, than the oppressed. They need each other to become free, to become human. For in this process of relational healing, we are all in need. We've seen this in Northern Ireland between the Catholics and Protestants. We've seen this in Rwanda between the Twa, the Hutus and Tutsis, or more correctly, because of German and Belgium colonization. We've seen this in Germany between East and West. We've seen this in Croatia between the Serbs and the Croats. And we've seen this in New Zealand between Maori and Westerners. And friends, we see this here in Canada between those of us who have immigrated here, settled here, and First Nations peoples. We are all in need of healing. Over the last 2 days, Pip, Brenda, Monica, Jessica, and I attended our diocesan synod, and Shirley too, see you there. Primate of our Anglican Church of Canada, the Most Reverend Fred Hilt, addressed us on the self-determining Indigenous church. So let those words settle in, self-determining Indigenous church. Self-determining because of this healing process of the legacy of colonialism, where as a church we were complicit with national government assimilation, where cultures were lost, languages were lost, voice, identity put aside. And Archbishop Fred reminded us that this healing is a process. In 1993, the church made an apology for the wrongs committed, and I've included that as an appendix in the sermon notes if you're interested. But like any relationship, after an apology, there is work to be done. For once an apology has been made, the offended party needs some space to heal, to trust, to grow. And once an apology is made, the offender needs to step back and ask the question, how do I need to change and behave differently? For we all know what it's like when someone says sorry and then carries on doing the same thing over and over again. We were encouraged to live into our apology, to continue the long journey. The Indigenous church needs a place to enculturate the gospel of Christ in local, authentic ways. There are now 12 Indigenous bishops. And after General Synod 2019, we could see the formation of a truly Indigenous national church with Bishop Mark MacDonald as Archbishop. That's the possibility at General Synod 2009. The continuation of a healing journey, equal power, full respect, growing trust. They want to be made well. Our own Diocese of New Westminster had an opportunity at Synod this last 2 days to live into relational healing ourselves. A motion was put to the floor of Synod, and I'm going to read it to you. It said this: in a gesture of restitution and reconciliation, guided by our baptismal covenant, the five marks of mission, the biblical jubilee, and our diocesan commitments to Indigenous justice, we request Diocesan Council and committees to create mechanisms for the direction of funds from the sale of and future sale of any properties and buildings since January 2018, such that, are you ready? In consultation with the appropriate local Indigenous leadership, 5% of funds be returned to the Indigenous nations, Métis and Inuit, and communities who are the ancestral caretakers of this land, and to be used as they see fit. 2.5% of funds are set aside to fund and endow Indigenous justice and reconciliation and Indigenous-led ministries in our diocese. And an additional 2.5% gets forwarded to the Anglican Church of Canada to support the self-determining Indigenous church. 10%. 10%. Now, for those of you who've never attended Synod, once a motion has been seconded and delegates are now free to state their opinions, and the room became pretty electric as people went through to the microphones and stood to share their views for or against the motion. People expressed hurt, their experiences of injustice, their fears. And as delegates deliberated, soon we realized Christ was in our midst and Christ was asking the same question. Do you want to be healed? And we weren't sure. What is this position of power doing for us? Perhaps it's keeping us ahead. Perhaps it's giving us financial security and a sense of control. But what is it doing to us? Maintaining unfair privilege, preventing mutuality, perpetuating fear, creating systems of inequality, victimization, helplessness. And the motion, my friends, was passed. And we all, settler, immigrant, Indigenous person alike, we stood up, we took our mats, and we walked, some for the first time. Amen.